Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, we're going to play a game real quick, James. We're going to see if Domas gives an answer over 10 seconds in the post game following the Heat game. Here we go. Domantas Sabonis, courtesy of Sean Cunningham.
And after, I don't know, 50-something minutes.
50? Where is this?
Well, this...
Exhausted, but just proud of the guys, proud of everyone. You know, there were so many moments in that game that we could have break, and we just kept pushing ourselves. You know, we had a lot of chances to take
Look
the game.
Look at this guy!
We did it in the second overtime.
Look at this guy!
18.4 seconds.
I need another one. I need one more. I need to know if this is real. I know Tone's question is going to be longer than 10 seconds.
Protecting the home court, pulling out these wins.
You know, it's important. You know, we love our fans. We love the city. I mean, you guys heard how it was today. You know, it's so much fun to play here. And
we're
trying to bring that energy back. Bring that energy back and light the beam.
Oh, 11.6.
Oh, see,
this guy, is he going to get one under 10 seconds?
This guy plays 58 minutes, can barely talk, and all of a sudden he's Mr. Chatty Cathy.
We're getting
here.
Slogans. We're going to light the beam at the end of answers.
Man, Domas' media strike is over.
Media. Watch, next answer is like, yeah, shut up, Malik. He's a pizza guy.
Oh, hammer.
I was waiting for him to pitch De'Aaron Fox's new shoe.
Well, there you
that
go.
Was next. Yeah.
Have just... you guys read DeMar DeRozan's new book? Really good.
Let me read this chapter.
Above the Noise.
Again.
By DeMar DeRozan.
The man just played.
I'm exhausted.
50 minutes. He can't breathe, and he just out here talking it up. Just out here talking it up, man. Hammer, we asked the question earlier. We talked a little bit about it on your show at the end of the Insiders. I'm going to add a little wrinkle to it. If the summer gets a little wild and the market is open, who's the most appealing player out there league-wide? Is it De'Aaron, Zion, or Devin Booker?
Ooh. I'm going to say... Okay, so that's a tough one. Like, my first instinct is to say De'Aaron Fox, right? But
because that's who it should be. But we all know that's
Well, I get that, but I would also say that Devin Booker is there's not that much difference in age, right? He's probably a year and a half older than De'Aaron. Mm. But the deal with Devin is that Devin he's a player that you don't have to design anything for. That you basically he can fit into any roster in the league. Mm. And that's not to say that Fox, you can't fit into any roster, but point guards are different. So if you already have a really, really good point guard, the guy that like runs everything for you, you know, there's only so many of those jobs available in the league where I think shooting guards, you know, it's easier to plug and play with. Even if you've got players around him, it's easier to plug and play a guy who plays a 1-2 like Booker does. But I still think that Fox is probably the right answer.
You want to ask him the second question here? I'll ask him. So we got rid of Zion out there. Although, like, I think league-wide, it would be Booker, Zion, Fox is how they'd be viewed. I think Fox probably should be one in that respect, but I think people are captivated by Zion Williamson. Last night was a perfect example. But the question was asked to me, and I had a tough time answering this one. If you switched Devin Booker and De'Aaron Fox on this team, just a straight-up trade, are the Kings better, worse, or the same?
I don't know if I can answer that. Honestly, because, you know, like Kyle and I discussed this earlier. If you look at the Kings and like who is indispensable, right? And this is not to take anything away from how good De'Aaron Fox is. I think you're a better team with De'Aaron Fox, but Malik Monk is a player that can step in and play like De'Aaron Fox, right? Mm. And you can look around like every position on the court there. You can kind of get away with someone else, you know, whether it's Keon or Malik or Kevin Herter, like you can get away with it. I think on the Kings specifically, like there's no way to replace all of what Domas does. And I think there's no way to replace Keegan because you don't have another Keegan at all. So like, you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of a, like, we were comparing him to the 49ers and, you know, we were looking at Domas as sort of Christian McCaffrey, the guy that, yeah, you can put another guy out there who runs, you know, 22 times a game, but no one can really replace McCaffrey. And then Keegan for me was more like Trent Williams. Like, he's just so valuable to this specific team because they don't have anyone else like him. They don't have a pipeline of players like him. They don't have a way to replace him at all. So, you know, again, if De'Aaron Fox were to get hurt for 2 weeks, I think Malik Monk would step in and, you know, not that the Kings wouldn't miss a beat. They'd miss a beat because they didn't have Malik starting as well or Malik off the bench, whatever. But you would think they could survive. The same thing goes for Malik. Malik was out. You know, you still have De'Aaron and you play major minutes. But I think there are certain things that the other two bring that are just so incredibly valuable to the roster that the Kings don't have any way to replace. And there aren't that many ways to replace them league wide.
It's a tough question, man. And James, I was kind of talking about it more. So like, I really like both of their games, Fox and Booker. And I'm a big fan of what Booker brings to the table. And that's tough, man. That's a tough question.
I'm a bigger fan of Booker after like the Team USA showing than I was before. I wasn't much of a fan of Booker before. I didn't love all that he brought to the table. I think he learned a lot from that, but it's not translating at all this season. Not like I thought. I thought he would just be like a really good leader. But then again, you know, I keep hearing that just maybe they don't like each other there. And I don't mean Devin and Bradley. I think there are other players on that roster that people around the room don't care for.
I think that team is struggling to figure out what everyone's supposed to do. Like, I don't know that Budenholzer has a grip on that team. And I don't know that it was his call to bench Bradley Beal. Like, maybe it was, but it sure reeks of something else. And, I mean, they're a mess. Doesn't mean they can't turn it around, but they're a mess right now. They've had a couple of different moments. One of them was without Kevin Durant, of course, but they've had a couple of different moments where you look at them like, oh, this team really is struggling bad. And they're living through one of those right now where they just can't get their feet underneath them.
It's usually when Kevin Durant's out, they can't win. But at this point, that doesn't seem like it's the case anymore. You know, we just saw, you know, that Nurkic going to the bench and Bradley Beal going to the bench. Look, they're just searching. And the depth is always going to be the problem when you have like $350 million players. It's always going to be a problem. It doesn't matter how much your ownership will pay or anything else. It's just really tough to find quality depth when all you have is, you know, you don't even have mid-level exceptions. All you have is like league minimum contracts for the most part. And so it's a tough world to live in, but still, once you get into a situation like they're in where you're locked into a roster, if you're not winning, like where's your other pitch? And they don't have another pitch. That's what we're seeing. Like all they can do is change out the same seven or eight guys that they're playing and just try different combinations of them. And that's not a good place to be in, especially when you know that, you know, they did a lot of what they did last year, relying so heavily on Kevin Durant. And it's really difficult to rely on a player his age to play 37, 38 minutes a night for, you know, the entire season. There's just no way to keep up. And Booker's not a guy who stays healthy. Beal's not a guy who stays healthy. And Nurkic isn't a guy who stays healthy. So a tough look there.
You know, we got James Hamm here, so we're definitely going to talk a lot of Kings and everything that's been going on since Doug Christie's been the new head coach. But before we get to that, I wanted to ask you, one of the things we spent a lot of time on earlier in the show is the Warriors and where they're at and how do they – can they get out of this? Does it end in, you know, if Steph Curry possibly getting frustrated at some point and asking out? But they don't look well, to say the least.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, Kyle and I discussed them a lot today on the Insiders, and it's something we knew coming in we were going to discuss because Kyle had sat down and watched them play, you know, during last night's game and then ended up shutting the game off. Mm. Like, just like, oh, this isn't fun to watch at all. Mm. I mean, when you lose to a team that, you know, in the Miami Heat that played a double overtime game the night before in Sacramento, and then you just get stomped by them, that's just a bad look. And like, look, not to like, you know, say I was right. But
no, shut
like,
up, James.
Talk,
I kept
talk,
saying
talk,
earlier
James.
In the season, man.
Shut up, James.
I kept saying it, Drew Down. I kept saying it, bro. like, let's be honest. Like, Steve Kerr did a great job of smoke and mirrors early in the season. Great job of getting the most out of a roster, playing 12 guys, moving guys around. But there's just not a lot of talent on that team.
So was that just overachieving? Was that all they were doing at the beginning of the year?
No, it's just, like, again, guys played really well. Steph was playing really, really well, and he was able to carry him. But at the same time, you have an entire roster filled with, like, on a good team, like 7th, 8th, and 9th players. Mm. You know, you got a number one in Steph. You got probably a fifth best player in Draymond at this point in his career, fifth option, but really like a fifth best player. I'd say Wiggins is probably more like a six man, a quality six man. You can say maybe the same with Kuminga, you know, but then after that, like all of these players they brought in, if you're relying on them to be major rotational pieces, whether it's Kyle Anderson or Buddy Hield, or, you know, just name that free agent that they brought in, it's a bunch of guys who you can't consider like second or third options on a really good team. And when you pack an entire roster full of them, like, this would have been fine if you would have had this offseason that they had when you were really good and you had Steph and Clay and Draymond at their peak. And even for that matter, you know, like Looney's a shell of himself. If you would have had that, like this type of offseason where you brought in a Buddy Hield and Kyle Anderson and Melton, D'Anthony Melton, I think you would have had something, but that's not what they were adding to, you know, and those guys have to play so far out of position as far as like pecking order that like that team just isn't working at all. So we'll have to see how it all ends up. It's possible that they're able to go out and make another move and bring in, you know, something different, but that you're kind of grasping at straws at this point, and you feel a little bit bad for Steph because this way he's going to go out. Like, you're going to go out either asking for a trade or not even asking, just an organization saying, hey, do you want to go ahead and go? And he'll say yes or no, or just being on a bad team for a couple of years.
If I'm the organization, I don't ask. Make him do it.
Yeah.
I'm not asking, hey, we want to do right by you. Nope. We want that retirement tour. We want all of that. Kobe went down with the ship. Mm-hmm. That team stunk. Dirk went down with the ship. That team stunk. Steph can go down with the ship too.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. It's kind of like what Damian Lillard went through the last couple of years of his career, except for he didn't get four championship rings. Like, that's where
Dame Lillard's career is not over.
Yeah.
You're talking about his career in Portland.
Yeah, his career in Portland. Yeah. But I get it. People are saying in the chat, like, you can't feel bad for Steph because he won all these things. But same time, like, this is a great player who's playing on.
Yeah, but it happened to Dirk. It happened to Kobe. Like, both, like, the Mavericks stunk. They were terrible. And I can't remember Tim's last years. I don't imagine that they were bad, but I can't remember Tim Duncan's last few years. I don't remember when the Spurs, when Pop's streak finally ended. I don't remember. So that was before that Tim Duncan or after.
Kawhi was kind of in and out of the lineup. Tony Parker, Tim was
Kawhi was gone because they didn't.
Tim was around when Kawhi left,
wasn't he?
Maybe. Maybe.
No, Kawhi had already left.
But the team 500, the team's Popovich's streak didn't end with Kawhi.
They went out and got LaMarcus. No, they went out and got LaMarcus.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's what.
Yeah. So he extended that run. I know. It's
so maybe everything was fine for Tim Duncan, but for everyone else who was with their team for basically two decades, you didn't really go out on a high note.
Yeah, and,
yeah, I think it.
Go ahead. No, you're good.
Well, I think it's funny. Like the night night meme is probably going to become something different. Uh-oh. It's going to be Steph dreaming of what used to be. We ain't going to see that a whole lot of that anymore. It's going to be like, hey, you remember? You go ahead and go night night because what you're living through right now is a nightmare.
Well, what'll be great is when he goes night night and the Warriors are like 18-32.
Yeah.
And no one will care. It'll just be like, oh, Steph Curry, night, night. Yeah, for their 19th win of the season.
Steph Curry, night, night. The Warriors, 17 games under now.
Yeah.
We should be so lucky.
It's tough, though. Like, look, again, he's an outstanding player. Like, watching him in his prime is always, like, one of the biggest gifts that we've been given as basketball fans.
I mean, watching him two nights ago was incredible.
Yeah.
Like, even against the Kings, where in the first half he's dragging the lifeless carcass of the Golden State Warriors, you know, trying to drag them to a competitive game before 2 4-point plays aren't enough. And he's just like, you guys suck. Like, what do you want me to do? And, you know, the whole second half goes to hell. And I know he only played the third quarter because Steve quit, rightfully so, at the beginning of the fourth.
Too busy playing non-flops.
Yeah, flopping. That man was scared of Doug and was like, hey, just send the bench in. I want to get this game over with. Get me out of here.
Doug's going to hit me. You go ahead. Let's get out of
here. Who's going to be the first coach Doug actually punches?
JJ. Well, no, he's not going to play JJ. Well, maybe next year.
Oh, yeah. Four games.
JJ, he's going to sock JJ. Good. JJ going to have some little smug look or something to say.
Doug can just look at him. Bro, I've punched prettier people than you. Get out of my face. Get out of my face. Hammer, what constitutes a turnaround for you as it pertains to the Sacramento Kings? What if you were to write the article on the Kings beat and start the show on the Insiders with Kyle and the Kings have turned this thing around, what would that mean? What would the Kings be at that point?
Yeah, I think that's a good question because they're so close to it right now. I mean, what are they? They're half game behind the 9-10. They're game and a half behind like the 8 seed. And you can just keep going. They're three games out of fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Like, it's right there. Yeah. They're like three games out of fourth place. And so, like, look, I don't know what to expect in Boston, but I think we're going to learn a lot about sort of the resiliency and how Doug's message carries when they hit the road and they have a six-game road trip and they have this three game. So, nine of the next 11 are on the road. I think that we'll learn so much about this team. But also, I think as of right now, I already feel like there's a turnaround. You know, I think that I could say, you know, I need this record or that record, but like the Western Conference kind of waited for him and said, you guys going to catch up? Like, we're waiting for you. Come on. You know, are you doing this or not? And all of a sudden you're looking at an opportunity here that, you shouldn't deserve, to get right back in it. And I think that they have every opportunity, whether it's Phoenix hitting the skids or Minnesota. Like, look at all the teams above them. Mm-hmm. Are there any of them that you're really scared of? Except for when you get to the top and you got, you know, that two or three teams at the top, and even one of those you just beat. So, like, yeah, I think this is a moment where, you know, I kept telling you guys, I need this team to prove to me and show me that they deserve for Monty McNair to go out and spend first round pick to improve the roster. Mm. I think we already got there. And I didn't think we'd get there like this. I didn't think there would be a five game win streak, and the Kings would, you know, be within a game of 500, like within 2 weeks of Mike Brown being gone. So yeah, it's kind of it's good to see. But at the same time, like, go out there and make your move now. They showed you that the season isn't over. The season's alive and well, and you have an opportunity, but go add what you need to add right now. And don't think that, oh, it was just a coach that was a problem, and you're going to be able to skate by, because the second, again, if you lose Keegan Murray for a week, you're in a whole bunch of trouble again, just not being able to stop anybody who's 6'7", 6'8", and hoping that you can get through it. So,
James, I'll ask you a question I asked a couple other people. Do you see something schematically different with this team under Doug Christie, or is it just vibes? Like, is it just they feel better and somebody's believing in them, or they got more confidence, or stuff that you can't really see, you can't quantify, that's making them play better? Or, you know, do you see a different type of way that they're playing basketball?
No, I think, like, I know it's weird to say that they are like playing on vibes right now, but I think it's a little bit of that, and it's a little bit of just the fact that, let's be honest, this team just underachieved. They underachieved under Mike Brown. They weren't good under Mike Brown because they couldn't hit shots. Like, we can talk all we want about, you know, the fact that they're giving up 15 threes a night, 15 made threes a night. But if they were hitting 14, we wouldn't have had that as part of a narrative. It's just the fact this team, for whatever reason, got off to a weird start and then had this little gloomy cloud hanging over them and couldn't figure out how to get out from underneath the cloud. And, you know, I talked about this with Kyle a little bit. Like, it's just like Doug popped up an umbrella and said, all right, guys, everybody huddle together. I got you. We'll ride out the storm together. And, you know, here they are. Like, the rain just isn't hitting them right now. And there's still dark times. Friday could be a really dark time. That's a great Boston Celtics team. But you feel a little more confident with the fact that Doug has their ear, and that they're just, you know, for whatever reason, they're playing hard. And when you play hard and shots start to fall, all of a sudden you become a juggernaut. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing them figure out how to win close games where they couldn't before, and just realistically perform up to the level that we expected. This team is really talented. Mm-hmm. We can't keep saying that we all thought they'd be a 50-win team. And, you know, and then when they start playing.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Playing up to that potential, we're like, hey, this is shocking. It's like, well, no, it was just shocking how bad they were. Like, well, I think we're all caught off by how bad they were. I know, Kenny, you asked a really good question about, like, if we all thought this was a 50-win team before, you know, why is everybody making the excuse that they need to go out and add to this roster, you know? And it was during the, I think, the Monday show when they fired Mike Brown, after they fired Mike Brown. Mm-hmm. And it's like, look, this team always had 50-win potential, and that's who they should have been. They probably should have been like 51, 52-win team. I don't know if they can get there now. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be an extreme second half where you won like the majority of your games. I mean, consider, like, at this point what it would take for them to get to 50 wins. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about a team that can get to the 6 seed or can get to the 5 seed, they're still going to need somebody at the wing if they're going up against, like, name any of these teams. Look at all the teams that are above them, and they're still going to need more defensive players. They're still going to need more length and athleticism. So But that doesn't excuse the fact that I thought this was a really good team already. It's just a really good team with a couple of holes. Mm-hmm. And holes that, you know, if you're going to go up against the you know, teams like Denver or OKC in the playoffs, you're going to run into trouble. So I think there's kind of like a happy medium here where, yeah, they're good and they're showing us how good they could have been. We're just getting a little bit late preview to it. And, you know, I think they still have time to climb in and be a team that wins 48 games, 47 games. It's just going to be really tough to get that next couple of wins because of what you put yourself up against.
We'll come back. We'll talk more Kings basketball with our insider from the insiders, James Hamm, here with D'Lo and KC on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. I thought Kenny was about to go.
No. I'm in the KC screen. I've got the top 100 plays since 2000 playing, and play 30, I don't know what it is, 34 or something, was Gerald Green's alley-oop.
Oh.
That's still just amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's incredible.
Oh.
That's incredible.
Man.
You're just clutching your chest. I was like, well, we promised each other,
Elizabeth.
We promised each other it'd be on camera. Here it is. Here it is. Hammer, we learned during the commercial break, for those on the radio, I'll fill you in. James hates vibes. James, that's why he's paired with Kyle. The very opposite. Kyle, big vibes guy. James,
curator of vibes.
Don't talk to James about vibes. He don't want to hear it.
No. But I'm a vibes guy too. Like around the office, like we're all vibes. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, vibes will take you to a certain place. And hey, look, you never know, like when you get into the playoffs and everything else, but I'd rather have vibes with a whole lot of talent than just vibes. Mm. And, you know, like I'll tell you, you know, we saw last year was the Memphis Grizzlies. They've always been vibes. They play, and it's that, like, it's not like a cool chill vibe. It's like, we're not going to let you take a single playoff for 48 minutes. And if you think you beat us, you haven't. Like, we saw what that looked like last year with no talent. Hmm. Like, because it was still, they still fought you, but it's like what's the Black Knight from Monty Python, you know, like trying to bite your kneecaps. Like he doesn't Campbell. Have any arms or any legs left. He's just like, I'll kneecaps. It's like, okay, that's fine. I'm just going to walk around you now. Sorry, Memphis Grizzlies. You don't have the talent to keep up. And that, like, you know, again, like vibes matter, and vibes are what can win you a whole bunch of games here. Also, I would love to see vibes with a 6'8" forward that can jump out of the gym and has a long wingspan and can hit a three shot.
So you are still very much of the belief the roster needs to be upgraded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that doesn't change because you won some games. Like the roster, like, let's not act like they tried to make moves before they did the DeMar DeRozan trade. They tried to do moves when they made the DeMar DeRozan mm-hmm. trade. So like they know that their roster has some flaws. You know, it's why you brought in Doug McDermott. It's why you brought in Jay Crowder, and hoping mm-hmm. to like stem some of that until you can get the right move. And it hasn't worked out yet, but at a certain point, like, you need to go out and add something to this in order to put them over the hump.
So discussion that we were having earlier and asking people, and I'll tell you right now, James, it seems to be unanimous. Yes, we were asking people, because you want to trade, you want to make a move with somebody. Have you fallen in love with Devin Carter to the point where, I'm not trying to trade him? And a lot of people were like,
let's
yes.
be real. It is love at first sight.
Love at first sight. That's right. Love at first sight with Devin Carter. And I'm not there yet. There's deals out there that I would move Devin Carter. But I like what he brings to the table. I think it's really, really needed for this Kings roster. And I'd be hesitant to move on from Devin Carter. I said I would be more willing to move on from the 2028 pick than I would Devin Carter.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. Like, I do love the rebounding. The rebounding is crazy. I don't think I've ever seen a guard outside of, like, Josh Hart that just, like, he shows up in the screen all the time. You're like, hey, where did he just come from? How did he get to where he is on the court, and how did he grab that rebound? And I appreciate that, like having somebody who goes in there and, like, for a guard who rebounds like that. But I also look at him and I understand that, like, there's a lot of work to be done there. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a 21-year-old dude, a third-year college player that came into the league, and man, he's got to speed up his release on his 3-point shot. Mm-hmm. He's got to bring that thing down about 8 feet. It's like what they did with Davion a couple of years ago, where all of a sudden he started shooting a balloon ball. I don't get that. Like, I'm surprised that during this time they haven't worked with some of that. And I'm not somebody who believes in changing somebody's shot completely, but at the NBA level, people are going to adjust, and that 3-point shot is going to get swatted. Hmm. And so there are problems that I still see. And like, he's not a finished product, like any young player isn't a finished product, but that's where I'm looking at him and going, okay, like, yeah, I mean, he's nice, and you're probably better with him than you are without him. But at the same time, if he's got to be a piece to go out on a major trade, I also believe that Keon Ellis is giving me and a lot of other people some belief that he needs to play a whole bunch more minutes. And if you're going into playoff series and stuff with a 3-guard set of, you know, Fox, Monk, and Ellis, I think you're pretty good.
What does love at first sight mean anyways? Is it literal? Like, the first time you see someone, you fall in love? Like, the first time Devin Carter walked out, I'm in love. Or... yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that's what I mean. 3 games later, can you go, no, it was love at first sight with Devin Carter?
Yes. So with basketball, first game would be love at first sight.
Okay.
Mm. I think some people are there. I'm not, but I really like Devin Carter. I like what he brings, man. It's a level of toughness, physicality. Yeah. Another guy that is just, you know. Oh, well, thank you, Drew Down.
Drew Down says it was love at first sight with D'Lo and Casey. Oh. I think he's lying. I'm glad we kept Drew Down. Greatest thing to come out of the Warriors playoff series was D'Lo and Casey getting Drew Down.
That's right.
And Uncle Luma.
I can tell you, there is one player in all of my time watching Kings basketball that I remember exactly what you're talking about, love at first sight. And that was Jason Williams playing his first game. I went to Fan Fest, and it was like, oh my goodness. He did like 3 of those passes that he was so known for. And it was like, what in the world is this kid? Cause we had not seen a lot of him. Mm. And even when you did, like, he had been suspended and there was all kinds of questions about him. I think there was one point where didn't he get kicked off the Florida team? Yeah. And he was, the first moment he was on the court with Vlade and Peja, well, Vlade and Weber and, whoever was on that first iteration, Peja had signed there as well, but it was like...
Oliver Saint-Jean, Tariq Abdul-Wahed.
Olivier Sejois, excuse me.
Tariq Abdul-Wahed. Sorry.
Tariq Abdul-Wahed, Olivier Sejois, yeah. But the first time you saw Jason Williams, you're like, oh, I'm over it. That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I can't wait to watch every single game he ever plays. Mm-hmm. And so outside of that, I think most players, like, it takes a little while before they really show you who they are. You get to see some, like, fun things about them. But, like, the love at first sight thing, that's the only one where, like, I think Brian Grant had a little bit of that too. Mm-hmm. Like, when the Kings first got Brian Grant, you're like, oh, man, he looks like a little mini Karl Malone. but then it just kind of capped out as the same player, and he was good, but he never reached the heights that you thought he would.
I think Hubie said Jay Will was the smartest basketball player he'd ever been around.
Mm.
That's really high praise from Hubie. I know he said he had the best court vision he ever saw, which I think we all know that.
I'll never forget hearing
Jason Williams caused a lot of basketballs to go flying out of bounds in rec leagues.
I'll never forget hearing Jason Williams. He's in an interview or somebody telling a story about him. He said, just growing up, he would go into the gym and he would, for at least 1 to 2 hours, just behind the back passes on the wall. Like, that's all he would do, just on the wall. No shots, not just pop, pop. All that, and it shows.
Mm-hmm.
It shows with the way he handles that ball and the way he can pass.
There was a lot of love at first sight with Domas. That's a good call from Bryce right there. Remember the hug heard around the world? Oh, yeah. I think your son fell in love with Domas, if I remember correctly, right?
Oh, yeah. He turned around. He was sitting down below us. He turned around and he goes, oh, my gosh, he's so good. And I'm like, yeah. No, he is. I mean, that's like I say that all the time. Like, you never want to lose appreciation for a player like Domas. And I've said that the same thing about DeMarcus Cousins. Like, DeMarcus on the court, there were things that DeMarcus did that nobody who's 6'11", 295 pounds ever did and may ever do. But he also was like the gateway to the big men that we see right now. People did not do 360 spin moves on the break at half court while a guard's diving at him and then go between his legs and then get to the basket. Plus, he contorted his body like a big man, like so crazy for a big man to be able to fight through traffic and twist and turn. DeMarcus was an absolutely incredible player to watch play on a nightly basis.
What's Devin's best attribute? What's the best thing that Devin Carter brings to the Sacramento Kings?
Oh, I don't think it's any question. It's rebounding.
Rebounding.
Yeah. Okay. And that is a very, very important thing. Rebounding from a position that you don't typically see it. I don't have his numbers pulled up, but I'm going to guess his per 36 numbers are like so much higher than anyone thinks, like astronomically high as a rebounder. And like for me, I've seen a lot of guards that can rebound, but like what he's doing so far is really, really stunning. Yeah. Let me see. Devin Carter per 36. He's averaging 13.1 rebounds per game per 36. I mean, the only one who's better is Domas at 13.8. So when you see a player who has like an elite, like almost uncanny skill, something that is, I know a lot of it is like effort based, but also just a natural instinct for going and getting the ball. And that's something that I think people are going to see. Like, he's a ball hawk. Like, the ball is always right near him. He's one of those players that his energy finds the ball. And so I think he's going to be a really good player. But I also know you have other needs, and that's why I would still like listen on offers.
So he's not, I don't want to say untouchable. I don't think anybody is right now, but like, he's not, you would move him for, if it meant you could get a Cam Johnson or something like that, do you still involve him in that type of trade?
I would, because I think a little bit like what you're saying earlier, I think there's always a possibility that 2027, 28, 29, 30, those first round picks are going to be more valuable to the Kings at that point than the player that they could get for him right now is just further along on his path. So it might be short-sighted for sure. But I also, you know, I think what you'd be giving up is a really, really good role player, future role player for a very, like a really good role player that's already there. And so, like, I don't have the fear that, you know, even when you saw Tyrese Haliburton, and maybe that's another guy that we just like glazed over when we're talking about like players that people instantly fell in love with. But Haliburton, like his feel for the game, like on the first moment you saw him, you're like, oh man, that guy's got it. He knows exactly what he's doing. But I don't think you're giving up. But my point is that you're not giving up another Tyrese Haliburton. You're giving up a really good role player. And like, I mean, even if that's a starter, like you're giving up a young Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or, you know, again, a young Josh Hart. You're not giving up like a young Tyrese Haliburton or a young Anthony Edwards or something like that.
Okay. So what are your expectations now moving forward? Like, after what we've seen hammer through the last five games, you know, they got this three-game road trip coming up. You got Chicago in there. Of course, it starts with Boston. And you've got some really tough games when you come back. I think Houston is here when you get back. Yep. I think most people, and I guess I should ask this question rather than do you feel like schematically things are different, or is it really just Doug and, again, go back to that word, is it just Doug and vibes?
No, I get what your question is there. I'm going to say it's Doug and vibes, and it's a team that underperformed and should have been a lot better than they were already. you know? And so, you know, like I've told you guys this, like when this job came free after Luke Walton was let go, like there was serious consideration for Doug to take the job then. Mm-hmm. And it, like my advice to him was do not touch that job with a 10-foot pole. Like there's no way to keep that job. That team wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get fired and rolled up like everybody else here in Sacramento. And I just don't feel that with this team. I feel like I was concerned that there wasn't going to be a way to unlock them and that this would be a short-term job for Doug. But at the same time, we all know how talented they are, And like if someone has the right ability to reach them and get them on the right path, that like this is still a team that should be a 4, 5, 6 seed in the Western Conference. Even today, the way that the West has waited for you, that's still on the table. And so I'm excited for Doug specifically because his particular like brand of basketball, but also of like he just thinks about the game and about life differently than a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And you know, again, we talked about this a little bit, but you know, game one he quoted Bob Marley, and then last game he quoted Deepak Chopra. Like
yeah,
the dude like reads interesting stuff. He has an interesting view on the world. I know years ago, like he gave DeMarcus Cousins The Art of War, trying to reach DeMarcus Cousins because DeMarcus Cousins was trying to win battles the wrong way and didn't understand that like he was just like fighting against himself more than he was anything else. And there are some powerful lessons that you can learn from a book like that about how to approach life or how to approach anything. And so Doug has like a very interesting approach to all of this. Like, and I think the biggest thing that early on that's really caught the players and that I think people just now are catching on in Sacramento is just Doug's deep love for the Sacramento Kings, for who they are, for the city, for what it provided him in life and what it did for him, the city, the fans, like being part of that franchise, being part of that team that felt like the most amazing family that Doug had ever had. And he wants that back. And there's no one that I've ever talked to who feels more that they have unfinished business in Sacramento than Doug Christie. Like his only goal is to win a title here. And so now he's getting his identity, albeit not as a basketball player, as something different, but he feels like this is his opportunity. And, you know, I don't think he doesn't take that lightly. And the players already feel that they, you know, it's not when he took everybody up to the roof and showed them the beam, that wasn't some gimmick. He literally meant that you are the light of this city. Mm-hmm. And if you're in Sacramento and you don't believe those words, well, you haven't noticed, you haven't been here, you know, or you haven't been here through the good times with the Kings. Like mm-hmm. this is the light of the city, the Sacramento Kings are. And I just think Doug has a unique perspective on it and his willingness to share that perspective and to do it in a very unique way. Like it's captured the imagination of those players, but also I think it's going to continue to capture the imagination of the people in Sacramento.
Yeah. I always remember, if you're having tough times this week, Doug Christie believes in you. Mm. He might not even know you. Just know that Doug Christie believes
that's
in you.
That's it.
Get it.
He's the guy who writes the captions on cat posters.
There you go.
Hang in there, little fella.
Get bracelets. Get bracelets made. Doug Christie believes in me.
Put it on a shirt. Bracelets, like you said.
Doug Christie right. believes in me.
All of it, man.
I'm going to get into an argument with one of our bosses. Well, Doug Christie believes in me.
But you know what? That seems to have worked for a lot of the people in that locker room. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it seems, regardless of how they got here, they needed a little TLC. Mm-hmm. Tender love and care.
My waterfalls.
And don't go chasing them, though. Mm-hmm. Don't go chasing them. But Doug has provided that. And you combine, and it's not just that, though. You combine that with his knowledge. You combine that with, you know, given opportunity to guys to play, and they've rewarded him for that. You know, this team also, you know, they probably were looking at themselves as like, you know, hey, we've kicked and screamed about some of the things, or we've laid down whatever you want to say. We got to answer here. You know, we got a coach out of there. We got a new coach in. We have to answer, and they've responded well. Mm-hmm. And I think they get a lot of credit for the way that they've played the last week and a half or so as well.
Well, that, and I'm really glad that Doug's getting this opportunity now as opposed to 3.5 years ago, because he now has so much more experience. Mm. And that's just like, it's the reality. Like, there's one thing to want a job, and you know, we saw it with the 49ers, all the talk coming out about Nick Sorensen, right? Like, he just wasn't ready for the job, and they still love him. They still want him there, but he wasn't ready for that. And whether that's him saying that or that's them saying it to him, it doesn't matter. It's the reality of the situation. We all watch it play out on the field. I think that at this point, you know, you give a coach the opportunity to work under 3 head coaches, which is like not normal, but okay. He gets to work under Luke and Alvin and now Mike, but also coach Summer League, also build these relationships with some of the individual players like Domas, learn so much from a guy like Jay Toriano. And then you wrap that up into all the basketball knowledge he had before, all the one-on-one conversations he had with Coachy, with Pete Carril and Rick Adelman. And, you know, like all of this time that he spent around the game, like, I think this is a perfect moment for him and a perfect team to take over. And again, I hope they give him this the support he needs, both the players, but also, you know, the organization, go out and get the pieces that he needs to be successful. And, you know, hopefully he's there a long time.
James, I tried to make an argument earlier this week. Maybe it was a bad one, but how they respond to their first loss, I think, is just as important how they responded over the course of the last couple of games. Because it's you're riding high, right? And the high, it just keeps getting better, and you keep winning, and you're playing 50 minutes in a double overtime thriller. You come back from 17, crowd's going crazy. You're at home, thank God. Everyone's smiling. Domas is exhausted, but he's smiling ear to ear. And it's easy to like feel a certain way, and it's easy to talk glowingly about, you know, the team and all of these different things when that's happening. But in hypothetically, you go out, you get beat, whether it's beat up or just beat by the Boston Celtics. How are you responding to that? You know, you got your first loss, you know, against the Los Angeles Lakers. That was the first game Doug Christie coached. You're still, I don't mean this in any type of way, you're still wiping the Mike Brown dirt off, and, you know, Doug gets him back here, you get settled. All right, let's go get a basketball game. And then it's just been this continuous high, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think how they respond after that first loss is equally as big of a deal.
No, I think so too. And, you know, I think Doug, like he said it, he said a couple of crazy sentences. Like, I don't want to, let's see, I want to teach them how to play. I don't want to make them run plays. There's all of these things that he keeps coming up with, but he's like, hey, the tough times will be there. Mm-hmm. We just have to be able to hold together, mm-hmm. and you know, hug each other through it and make sure that we all get through it together, as opposed to splintering, as opposed to like all these little things happening around the team. And this is a moment, again, where you hope that you get 100% buy-in. And if you don't, it's probably time to jettison somebody. Mm-hmm. If somebody's not 100% in, then go ahead and get both feet out of the circle and Monty, go ahead and take care of business, whatever you got to do. Mm-hmm. And that goes for anybody. It doesn't matter who you are. If you're not buying in right now, you know, this is an all-in time where you got a lot of work to do and a difficult schedule to do it and not a lot of time to fix the mistakes you've made. But I definitely like the path that they're on, and I like the vibe around the team.
Doug's a big hugger.
Oh, he's a hugger. I've never gotten. I've got it.
Well,
the dap.
Well, Doug is a big hugger, but think about the two iconic pictures from the last week.
That's true.
Keon, and then
that's true.
Was it Domas and Keon?
Domas and Keon. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Doug's a hugger.
Oh, they feel that love. Like, I'm a hugger too. They do. They do. Yeah.
What'd you say, James?
I said they feel that love, and they all feel his passion for what's happening and for the city and for the franchise and what it means to wear a Kings jersey.
I can't believe I'm going to dig into this bag, but was it John Lennon that said all you need is love?
That's
no, it was Mary J. Blige.
No, that's Love Is All We Need.
Come
on, man.
You're right.
Come on, man. This rookie over here. That's a John Lennon song, right? No,
or
is that Beatles? It's the Beatles. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Great stuff, Ham, as always. We appreciate you so much for being with us. If you're on YouTube or one of the streaming platforms, hit the thumbs up before you go. Hit the subscribe button and make sure you are locked in here tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. with James Ham, Kyle Madsen, the Insiders here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Cavs.